This episode of Cape Up is sponsored by MeUndies. Check out MeUndies.com and find the best pair of underwear in the world. Get 20% off the first pair at MeUndies.com/CapeUp.
Hey everyone, I'm Jonathan Capehart and welcome to Cape Up. Renowned philanthropist and art collector Aggie Gund stunned the art world when she sold Masterpiece, a 1962 painting by Roy Lichtenstein, for $165 million in July. Not because she sold it, but what she used the money for. With the help of Ford Foundation President Darren Walker, Gund used $100 million of the proceeds to start the Art for Justice Fund to combat mass incarceration. And you can hear Gund and Walker talk about why that painting and why that issue right now. Aggie Gund, Darren Walker, thank you very, very much for being on the podcast. This is really special.
Thank you. I like seeing you again. I saw you a number of years ago, but now I only see you on programs and announcing things, and I don't get to see you personally, so it's especially nice.
And it was really fun because we were road tripping to a dinner party in Virginia. And that was a dinner party focused around art, and that's why we are here today. I want to talk to you about a work by Roy Lichtenstein from 1962 called Masterpiece. What spoke to you about that work? Why'd you buy it?
Well, I bought it partly because I really liked Roy and his wife, Dorothy. I saw them first at a dinner party that was at Emily Tremaine's way long ago, in the late 60s, and I think what attracted me was the message, dear Brad, soon you'll have all of New York clamoring for your work. This is a masterpiece, it said first. Soon you'll have all New York clamoring for your work. And I had not moved to New York when I got it, but when I moved to New York, I thought, it is the perfect piece. I'm glad I bought that. At one point, Cy Newhouse tried to get me to sell it, exchange it for something he had, and he would give me money on top of it because he wanted to have the piece. And I thought, I'm never going to sell this piece. So I just loved living with it. Always was such an iconic painting to me. And I had remembered, and I won't say the name of who it was, but somebody that had said, oh, well, out of the contemporary artists, Roy will never amount to anything. And it was a very well-known director of a museum.
And, I mean, you can name names. It's okay.
Well, I don't think it would be very appreciated if I said who it was. He has his opinion about contemporary art. He happened to be at the Cleveland Museum, and I think they were very slow in collecting art, and he used to follow me around and say, you'll never amount to anything until you collect Asian art. Then one night said that at a Guggenheim program with my husband in the audience. Well, at least she's managed to marry somebody that collects Asian art.
Wow.
So
holy
it
smokes.
Was a very funny thing.
Well, you showed him, because now you just recently sold Masterpiece and used a big chunk of the money to start the Art for Justice Fund. Darren, when I read about what was happening, I actually heard about it from another mutual friend of ours who said, oh, did you hear about this thing that Aggie Gund has done? And Darren is in the middle of it. She sold a painting, and now they've started this thing. And when I finally got a chance to read the story behind what was happening, it's such an interesting, dare say, brilliant idea of putting art to work for justice.
Well, I think it was Aggie's remarkable vision and her own passion for two things. For art, which she's been a lifelong collector and someone who loves artists, and her passion for justice, her concern for injustice and unfairness as she has seen it in the world, particularly manifest in the criminal justice system and manifest in the ways in which racial minorities have been discriminated against. And I think for Aggie, the criminal justice system is probably the greatest manifestation of the kind of injustice that has really concerned her. And I think her seeing 13th by Ava DuVernay, Aggie has met with and spent a lot of time with Bryan Stevenson and Michelle Alexander and Sherrilyn Ifill, people like that, as she's done her own homework to come to the conclusion that this is a scourge on the nation that has to be addressed.
You know, and I'm glad you brought up 13th, because I was going to ask if that was true, that seeing Ava DuVernay's 13th was the thing that sparked this idea, the Art for Justice Fund idea.
It did. I was having dinner with an old friend of my brother's who was deep, my brother George, who was deep into film. And this was a person, Marcus Hsu, that took Cindy Sherman, myself, and his friend that he lives with, his partner, to see 13th. And I, up to the very minute we were going to go, said, I don't think I can see this film because there'll be a lot of... This was something I thought was going to have a lot of 12 years a slave and that I was never able to go see. Marcus finally convinced me, and then I was really glad that I had gone to see it. And since I have, as Darren didn't mention, but I have 6 of my 12 grandchildren are Black.
I was going to ask you about that.
So it influenced me in that way, too. I thought I should do something about something that, to me, is so wrong about our system, that we've just loaded up our prisons with mostly people of color and given them different penalties and let them out on parole and when they've done the same minor crime as whites. The whites get on parole and the Blacks don't. And I thought I should know more about it, and then I thought maybe this is something I could address. But if it, again, hadn't been for Darren, I wouldn't have ever been able to do it. So.
Let me bring you back to your grandchildren, since you brought them up, and you talk about them a lot, and to try to make people understand that you are not a tourist when it comes to social justice, that this is something that you deeply believe in, that this is something deeply important to you, deeply important to you because of family. What are you hearing from your grandchildren? What did they say to you that helped push you over the edge to go see a movie that you were afraid to see? And for good reason, I would say, as an African-American who's grown sort of weary of seeing people of color hurt, killed on video.
Well, I think it's as much the 2 children of my 4 that have, one of them, 2 adopted children from Mississippi, Jackson, Mississippi, which is like another world to me when I went down there for their births. I really looked into a lot when I was there, the history of Mississippi, and I began to know what everybody should know. And so that's why I was so glad to meet Bryan Stevenson, because I think he has the whole thing sort of sussed out, where he says we don't know enough about what it was to be a slave and to go through slavery. And of course, Kara Walker has been somebody I've liked, that's an artist that does this, and more artists than I've ever thought of are very much into the history now and the social injustice, like Hank Willis Thomas, like the guy that went to Yale and that has done a wonderful job of illustrating. He's with Jack Shaman and Titus. Yeah, Titus, who has done a job of pointing out a lot about presidents that had slaves. And I've always thought about Jefferson in that way, and read all the books about the Hemings and about his relationship with his children, which he didn't give freedom to on the whole. Some of them did get to be free, one especially that could pass as white, but he really listened to his daughter rather than should have done what he should have done, having had these many children with his mistress that he didn't even in his final will give freedom to either.
And you mentioned Bryan Stevenson, who is the co-founder or founder of the Equal Justice Initiative, and who is pulling together the funds to open up a museum to commemorate, put attention to the lynchings that have happened across the country. He speaks in a way to these issues that I think is very compelling and forces the country to come to terms with, face these issues that still haunt it simply because people won't talk about it. And folks like Bryan.
And especially the legacy that he's putting forward of lynching. I said to a group of students that there are a lot of interns in different places that not only in studio in the school, but with MoMA that come to visit, and I had a room full of them, of about 55 of them last night. And I looked around the room and I thought, if I asked these people about lynching, these kids that still are in college and some of them art history majors, what they knew about it, they wouldn't know anything about a lynching because they weren't born in the 50s and they don't really know about that history. And if more of his TED Talks, which are really fantastic, could get out there and could be taught, and that we could really have more of an equality about teaching Black history than we do in schools. I mean, you can get courses, but it's not as if we require it. And we
Aggie,
should.
I don't think, though, that older Americans know about our history of lynching, too, because I think it, as Bryan says, it's been something that we refuse to acknowledge.
Well, I came back, I think you're right about that. We don't acknowledge it. I came back from Germany. I was in Poland because a friend of mine was the ambassador from the United Kingdom to Poland. And I came back from there and I said to this one psychiatrist that I was talking to, why didn't people stop them from doing this? And why did these things exist near towns? And he said, well, what did you do in the 50s about lynchings that you heard about? And it really took me back because I had known that there were such things, but they were very remote to me. And as a child that should have known in the 50s, I was in high school, I was going to college, and why wouldn't I have heard about this more than just very peripherally? And I thought it was terrible, but I thought there weren't that many lynchings. You know, that was the reason I didn't know about them, but there were. And so I think what he's trying to point out, and the fact that he uses as an illustration what's happened now in German cities where they have markers of what they did to people and how they mistreated and made, you know, the brunt of killings and everything else would be an important thing for us to learn about. So I champion his really trying to get people to recognize that there is another history. I've also learned about it through having Black children, that people don't seem to value Black minds like yours, say, and Darren's, as much as they do minds of Asians or other people that are not in the monolithic mainstream of either their countries.
This episode of K-Pop is sponsored by MeUndies. You want to look good in your underwear and feel comfortable, right? But the perfect balance is hard to find. Don't sacrifice style or comfort. Check out MeUndies. MeUndies are made from a sustainable source, natural soft fabric that is 3 times softer than cotton. That's what makes them the world's most comfortable underwear. Try them today. There is no risk. If you don't love your MeUndies, they're free. To get your 20% off, free shipping, and 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/K-Pop. That's MeUndies.com/K-Pop.
You know, Darren, we've talked a lot about what Bryan Stevenson is doing, and let's talk about what you're doing, the both of you. And the Art for Justice Fund, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. President, that the Ford Foundation is going to help run it, help administer it. How is this going to work?
Well, first, we were partners with Aggie as she developed the strategy, actually, towards the objectives around reducing mass incarceration. And we have set some numerical targets that we want to achieve. 25% reduction in the number of men and women incarcerated in America over the next 5 to 7 years. And that will happen through a series of investments in states across the country, because remember, most people in prisons are in state penitentiary systems and county jails. They're not in federal prisons.
That's a very good point.
And so the funds, the $100 million, plus the funds that we are raising in a matching campaign, will be directed to organizations working both nationally and in states on specific strategies that address disparities in sentencing, that aim to reduce private prisons, that seek to reform prosecutors' offices, and that seek to raise awareness and educate the public about the history of racism, slavery, and the implications today for this legacy that we must address. And through those investments, which will come really through Aggie's generosity in a series of organizations, the Ford Foundation's work is really to, in some ways, staff Aggie and to support her vision with the expertise that we have in-house here. So as Aggie said, she has relied on the expert staff at Ford, who many of whom have experience in criminal justice reform efforts. And so we are an advisor to her. The actual operations of this is really an administrative matter that we don't probably need to get into for the purposes of your important program, Jonathan.
Well, look, you folks can go to artforjustice.org to read up on everything. But the interesting thing is, I was looking to see how this was going to work. You have a specific tab that says what the Art for Justice Fund will not fund. And it goes through a whole list of things, which I don't think I've actually seen another organization do this, put out there. We will not fund individual organizations and individual programs. And, you know, having been involved in philanthropy peripherally, and also one of my first jobs out of college was at WNYC working with the development department. So I understand what you're getting at. But why is it important for people to know that individual programs are not going to be funded?
Well, it's very important to not waste people's time. We want to be explicit that you not waste your time seeking funds if this program is not something that will fund your kind of activity, your type of organization. The real challenge is, and as all philanthropists know, there are thousands of organizations that could potentially be funded, and you have a limited amount of money. And Aggie had a set of specific things she wants to achieve. There are a set of high-performing organizations who we believe will be best positioned to deliver, such as Bryan Stevenson's Equal Justice Initiative. So there are organizations who we know are well suited to actually right now get to work to really deliver on the Art for Justice Fund mission.
Because actually, the goals that you're trying to achieve, Aggie, that there's no time to waste. So I get that. You know, one thing that I wanted to ask, and I know you wanted to say something just a minute ago, but you're not the only one who is involved in this. You are the visionary. You are the founder. You put in a big chunk of the money. But there are a bunch of other people who have also sold artwork to be a part of this. How easy was it to get people to part with art to help be a part of this?
Well, I think I can't take any credit for that aspect because Darren's been the leader in trying to talk to people about it. I was never a good fundraiser, and
I wish people could see all the eyes rolling in this room. You are not a good fundraiser.
No. When I had David Rockefeller Sr. and nothing could have been better than his interest and
MoMA.
Yeah, at right, MoMA when we were raising the funds to build the Taniguchi addition and building to the modern. He was unbelievable with the help from Alice Victor and Marnie Pillsbury in saying, yes, I'll have lunch with them or I'll go down and visit them in Argentina or I will see them for supper or I will try to talk them into this or that they could do. And so it really was Darren going after some people. I would never have dared to ask for money for this because they could turn and say, well, you have the money, you give it. We have better things to do. But that was not the way he went about it. And he has found people that are interested. I think many people are interested now. They range from the right to the left in criminal justice. And I think many of them have different opinions than I would have. I'm more concerned, or not more, but I'm concerned about the people that are being held hostage in this awful environment that prisons are. And I think you shouldn't be making money off of prisoners and then letting them live in conditions that aren't just or aren't really good for anybody to live under and in, because the recidivism rate which exists is much more likely to be damaged by the prisons and how the prisons have treated people than life itself. I mean, there are books like the Becoming Susan Burden that are really very compelling. They show you what actually prison can do to harm people and re-harm them by pushing them into a position where they go back. And it also shows how people that really have the passion for getting rid of what prison does to you can do.
Jonathan, I want to address the really remarkable fundraising effort that's underway as a result of Aggie's vision, because the idea of raising a matching $100 million, which is quite ambitious, is something that's well underway. In fact, there are already over 25 collectors and philanthropists who have signed up
since
the announcement. And it's been really an exciting experience to see how energized people are by Aggie's vision for the fund and how collectors are both giving art but also cash. We're happy to accept cash at the Art for Justice Fund.
I was going to say, not just
and art. And the generosity of people like Alice Walton and the Walton Family Foundation, or Donald Marin, who Aggie was on the board of MoMA with, or Lori Tisch, the chair of the board of the Whitney Museum, and so many others.
The Lauders.
The Lauders, of course. The Tuttles.
Chenaults.
The Chenaults. many, many prominent African-American collectors. Indeed, there's over a dozen African-American collectors, Pamela Joyner out in San Francisco, who have signed up really because of their inspiration and their just admiration, I think,
well,
for
see,
Aggie.
I was going to ask, how important is it that it's Aggie Gunn who is behind this, that is making people think, I need to be a part of this, as much as it is the, you know, what she's trying to accomplish?
Well, I think it is because Aggie is behind this that people are so mobilized, because Aggie is held in such high regard and high esteem by art collectors around the world. And so the fact that she would take this unprecedented step of selling this masterpiece is for many collectors an indication that this is a serious, serious matter. And for some of them, they understand the issues around criminal justice. And for others, they are really only learning about the issues through Aggie's efforts to really elevate this as a public policy crisis and as an opportunity for philanthropy to make a difference.
Last question, Aggie. Why do you love art so much?
I don't know. I think it's because, and this is a very selfish thing to say, it was something I could see right away and never forgot when I saw a photograph or a painting or a sculpture that was about art. I could never get it out of my mind. And when I see the horizon and water and sunset, I do see a Rothko in many that I really see artists and art as something that I can tackle or know about that gives me not only satisfaction, but is something I could do better than most of the people that could do far more important things like science and, you know, business and law and doctor, being a doctor, that this was just attached to me from an early age. And I go into a house now, as I've said many times, where there's nothing on the walls, and it really frightens me because I grew up in a household that had a lot of things, though my father collected in a very esoteric way, and because of living in the West and being a stunt writer for different things, he identified with the West and collecting Western art. So that wasn't really my thing as much as it belonged to some of my brothers who sort of emulated, one of them particularly emulated what my father had done in his youth, which was to have a ranch out in Nevada. And he then became interested in cowboy poetry. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. But
no, and I take it you're not too much into it.
My daughter went to one of the festivals they had out in Elko, Nevada, and found that she was just mesmerized by this. I think anything one does with art and poetry and writing and visual arts, and that's one of the things that Darren has helped me and I can help a little with too, is identifying artists that could do things for this Art for Justice and really make things that made it clearer to people what happens in this massive incarceration we have. So that would be my wish, that we would get artists. And one of the people that works here and is so great is a woman that did poetry and did the first big poem for Obama's first inauguration, Elizabeth Alexander, who was really all for having more art, which I am, that illustrates things that have happened to this Art for Justice.
Aggie Gunn, founder of the Art for Justice Fund, Darren Walker, president of the Ford Foundation, both visionaries. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. Thanks for listening to Cape Up. Tune in every Tuesday. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher. And how about doing me a huge favor? Subscribe, rate, and review us. I'm Jonathan Capehart of The Washington Post. You can find me on Twitter at CapehartJ.
Hi there. My name is Alyssa Rosenberg, and I write a column about culture and politics for the opinion section of The Washington Post. I'm also the host of a new podcast miniseries called The American War. It's a guide to Ken Burns' new documentary, The Vietnam War, but it's also a deep dive on the biggest issues from that conflict that linger with us 50 years later. We'll discuss each episode as it airs with Ken, his co-director Lynn Novick, and many of the other voices featured in the film. Join me for this conversation on how America lost its way in Vietnam, and how Ken and Lynn are trying to help us find our way back. You can find The American War wherever you listen to podcasts and online at washingtonpost.com/theamericanwar. Thanks for listening.
The Washington
Post.